We're at the Voice of America in Washington, and you're with VOA Global. I'm Jim Stevenson.
And I'm Ira Melman. On today's program, Asian leaders and their regional partners wrapped up their summit in Myanmar's capital, but they made no progress on key issues such as South China Sea disputes and trade.
Hong Kong protesters are vowing to keep up their street demonstrations as some pro-democracy leaders pledge to turn themselves into police as a show of respect for Hong Kong law.
Controversy erupts this week when U.S. President Barack Obama was seen chewing gum in public at the Asia-Pacific Economic Forum in Beijing. What are Chinese saying about that?
We have that and much more coming up today on VOA Global right here on the Voice of America. It's time again for Daybreak Asia, a summary of Asian news and events for Friday, November 14th. Hi there, I'm Jim Stevenson. In brief today, Asian leaders and their regional partners appeared to make no progress on key issues such as South China Sea disputes and trade as they wrapped up their summit in Myanmar's capital. VOA correspondent Steve Herman is in town and he reports from Naypyidaw on the final day of the ASEAN and East Asia summits.
There were no major announcements after 2 days of wide-ranging talks. Some members of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations had hoped for significant progress on a binding code of conduct for the South China Sea. China claims all of the sea and rejects the claims of some ASEAN nations, including the Philippines and Vietnam. The summit host, Myanmar's President Thein Sein, said the code of conduct remains on ASEAN's agenda.
All of the leaders welcomed an early realization of a code of conduct for the South China Sea and declared 2015 would be the year to cooperate for its early conclusion.
There was also talk in the corridors about China's recent plan to work with 21 countries to create a new $50 billion development bank. Some governments see the new Asia Infrastructure Investment Bank as a rival to the Asian Development Bank. On the summit sidelines, ADB President Takehiko Nakao told VOA the new Chinese-led bank should adopt international standards for procurement, environmental protection, and social safeguards for its projects.
It's too early to talk about concrete ideas about the cooperation, but if it is established, we are prepared to consider appropriate cooperation.
Cooperation is the constant mantra at ASEAN, which critics contend means the association tries to paper over any conflicts. That lack of drama and hence major news seemed to pose a challenge for the nearly 1,500 journalists who were kept at a distance from the leaders.
It's sleepy. So, yeah, as you see, that we do nothing here, so because it's everything, we cannot cover it, so it gets boring.
For the leaders, however, the value of these summits is neither in the communiques nor the media statements, rather the opportunity to have face time with each other, both their friends and neighbors, as well as those more distant in terms of relationships and geography. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the ASEAN and East Asia summits in Naypyidaw.
President Barack Obama is raising thorny issues as he meets with Myanmar's government and opposition leaders on his second visit to the country. VOA White House correspondent Luis Ramirez is traveling with the president, and we hear more from him now from Naypyidaw.
A song and dance show and a gala dinner for heads of state in a slick new convention center showed how far Myanmar has come since emerging from decades of military rule and international isolation. After attending meetings on regional cooperation, Mr. Obama got to the more substantial part of his agenda, promoting political reforms in Myanmar that he says have not come as fast as many had hoped 4 years ago when the country began its transition from decades of military rule. In an interview with a Myanmar magazine, the president said that in the 2 years since his first visit in 2012, he has seen progress that includes economic reforms, the release of political prisoners, and the beginnings of a constitutional reform movement. But Mr. Obama said there has also been some backsliding. Former political prisoners continue to deal with restrictions, while journalists are still facing killings, arrests, and harassment. One area of special concern for the U.S. leader is the condition of the Rohingya people, a Muslim minority of more than 1 million, most of whom do not have citizenship. Thousands have been forced to live in camps following clashes with Buddhists in 2012 in Rakhine State. The issue of citizenship for Rohingyas is politically sensitive in Myanmar. Still, the U.S. president planned to bring it up in meetings with both the government and the opposition, including the renowned Aung San Suu Kyi, who Mr. Obama plans to see in Yangon on Friday, and who has been criticized for not taking a stand on the issue. The president's deputy national security advisor, Ben Rhodes, told reporters here a transition to a stable democracy is not possible without addressing the Rohingya question.
We recognize that this is a very complex issue here in Burma, that there are deeply held views, that there are contested views of history, but that doesn't change the fact that there are certain fundamental universal rights that need to apply for all people.
After meeting with Aung San Suu Kyi on Friday, the president heads to Brisbane, Australia for the G20 summit, where the subject of Ukraine will likely dominate discussions on the sidelines. Aides say President Obama expects to hold talks with European leaders following evidence this week that Russia continues to send equipment and troops across the border into Ukraine. Among the leaders attending the G20 summit will be Russian President Vladimir Putin. Luis Ramirez, VOA News, Naypyidaw.
Time for us to check back in on what's happening in Hong Kong, where protesters are vowing to keep up their street demonstrations, as some pro-democracy leaders are pledging to turn themselves into police as a show of respect for Hong Kong law. Shannon Van Sant fills us in from Beijing.
China's President Xi Jinping Wednesday called Hong Kong's protests illegal and said that law and order must be maintained. His comments were just the latest sign that Beijing's patience with the demonstrations is diminishing. Among protesters, there is a belief that authorities could begin enforcing a court order to clear protest sites in the coming days. Protester Pa Sha, who is with a group called Socialist Action, is camped out in central Hong Kong. He says the demonstrations will continue even if police succeed in clearing streets.
And there might be a period of low tide, but then eventually there will be a return of the movement. Eventually, as I said, like probably when the next round of the voting, the Legislative Council regarding the proposal, the political reform.
Hong Kong's government has injunctions on the main demonstration sites. Acting Chief Executive Carrie Lam has said police are preparing to enforce the law, including making arrests. This week, three leaders of the Occupy Central movement, one of the key groups involved in backing the protest, said they will surrender themselves in an act of civil disobedience that still shows respect for the law. A University of Hong Kong poll released at the beginning of this week indicates that 70% of protesters believe the pro-democracy demonstrations should continue, while 79% of people in Hong Kong who have not joined protest believe the protesters should go home. Shannon Van Sant for VOA News, Beijing.
Glad you could join me for a little while today. I'm Jim Stevenson. Daybreak Asia comes to you every weekday on VOA Global. It's also a podcast. You may subscribe to it for free at voanews.com.
This is indeed the VOA Global. It's not indeed VOA Global. It's VOA Global from the Voice of America. And this is the segment where we ask you to ask us or tell us what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, and react to some stories. Here's one story we did. More boats than fishermen in the typhoon hit Philippines 1 year after that super typhoon shattered millions of people's lives in the central Philippines. The storm is still affecting some of the island nation's poorest residents. And Van Dat Nguyen said on Facebook, climate change has affected our life seriously. That's why we're together, to reduce its negative effects and recover victims' daily lives.
If you happen to listen to our program yesterday, we mentioned a movie toward the end of our program, Final Spin, and we heard from the makers of that movie on Twitter.
Yes,
they gave
did.
Us a shout-out for mentioning their film.
And the guy who is in charge is, by the way, the film is 8 minutes long. He's still looking for money to finish it. He says there are some erotic scenes between a washer...
Two washing machines.
Yeah. And his line here is that just let the plot wash over you.
All right. That's cleansing thought. You can check it out on YouTube. Just type in Final Spin and you'll find more about that. Also, we'd like to let you know that we have our VOA calendars. You know, it's getting toward the end of the year and we're looking toward 2015. We have brand new Voice of America calendars featuring the American Southwest. If you would like your copy, all you have to do is email us voaasia@voanews.com. They are absolutely free.
Yeah.
Just give us your correct postal address, please.
Gorgeous, gorgeous pictures of the American Southwest. You're going to like it.
VOAAsia@voanews.com.
This is VOA Global. As far as the calendar is concerned, they usually have pictures with pictures of us in it. You know, the so-called personalities of Voice of America.
But instead,
they decided, well, in past calendars.
So.
Yeah. However, none of us are in this latest one.
I think they're telling us something.
Yeah, I think they are. And what this is just gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous photographs of the American Southwest, probably my favorite part of the entire country.
I'm Ray Kugel with the Hollywood Beat. What's new at the movies? A new science fiction blockbuster tells the tale of big trouble for Mother Earth and the heroic efforts to find a way out, literally.
What are you going to do with it?
I'm going to give it something socially responsible to do.
Can't we just let it go?
This thing needs to learn how to adapt, Murph.
Okay, let's mask up.
Like the rest of us.
In the movie called Interstellar, a group of space explorers must try to save the planet, ripped apart by drought and famine. They have to go far beyond our solar system, through a wormhole, which is a kind of break in the space-time continuum, to find a planet that can support human life. The secret mission to the unknown is headed by Cooper, a widowed engineer and test pilot turned astronaut, played by Matthew McConaughey, who must leave his family behind, including a 10-year-old daughter, perhaps forever. McConaughey, who must wear a spacesuit, not allowing him to show his famous pecs, is helped along by Anne Hathaway, who doesn't sing. She is an astrophysicist named Amelia. She is the daughter of Professor Brand, who came up with the idea for the trip in the first place, and played by veteran English actor Michael Caine.
Your daughter's generation will be the last to survive on Earth. You're the best pilot we ever had.
Sir Michael either needs the work or likes to work. I think he's just plain old school and enjoys showing up. The 2-year journey through the wormhole takes time travel to another level, where 1 hour equals 7 years back on Earth. The math computes, because it gives actress Jessica Chastain the chance to play McConaughey's daughter grown up.
By our solar system, to our galaxy. Here we go.
We're here.
We want to get down fast, don't we?
Actually, we want to get there in one piece.
Hang on. We have a mission. Our mission does not work if the people on Earth are dead by the time we pull it off.
Interstellar is a $165 million spectacular directed by Christopher Nolan, who also co-wrote the film with his brother. Nolan says it's more than just action, but also filled with mystery, suspense, and an emotional love story.
I want to make a mind-blowing science fiction film that has heart, that has emotion, that has relatable human characters. I want to try and, you know, combine the intimate scale of human interaction and the connections between us and exploration of that with the vastness of the universe and try and, you know, put these two things together. I saw that as a fascinating combination and a great challenge for me as a filmmaker.
Matthew McConaughey, coming off a Best Actor Oscar last year, gets a chance in this role to try saving the world.
There are many things I could say. I would say that the expectations of mankind must be about more than ourselves. And that the further out there that we explore, the more things out there that are unknown that we discover, we actually see that it reciprocates, comes right back, and revolves back to each of us, you and me. It becomes extremely more personal. The further out there we go, the more personal it actually is, and the more personal responsibility we actually have for where we go.
Yeah, right. I guess so. Anne Hathaway, another former Oscar winner, may say it a bit easier.
This is a sci-fi movie, and it is an intimate family drama, and it is action-adventure. And it's completely all these things, but it's also itself.
Then again, maybe not. But what is clear is that Interstellar is a movie filled with technical achievement and a visual stunner. With a running time of almost 3 hours, you should get your money's worth, especially when it comes to seeing such high-priced talent possibly get lost in space, even if it's not permanent. The Hollywood Beat goes on at voanews.com. I'm Ray Kugel.
We'll find a way. We always have.
I'm Sarah Williams with China Focus. Controversy erupted this week when U.S. President Barack Obama was seen chewing gum in public at the Asia-Pacific Economic Forum in Beijing. I spoke with VOA Beijing correspondent Bill Ide about the flap and other events from APEC.
Obama was spotted chewing gum. Most likely it was Nicorette. And there was a lot of reaction to this online about, you know, how some people thought that maybe he was nervous, so he had to chew gum to relax. And, of course, there were comments about, you know, how just, you know, such poor etiquette it was for him to be chewing at such a, you know, a grand occasion and in public. It's kind of interesting. It shows, too, the kind of big differences in cultures that there are between the two countries. And, you know, as a foreigner here, there's a lot of things that go on every day on the street that would probably shock many overseas. So it was interesting, but it did generate quite a lot of discussion online.
Yes, I understand that authorities before the APEC meetings had called on the public in Beijing to refrain from certain types of behavior. And I guess when these meetings occurred, you know, some people sort of thought, well, why is the U.S. president doing this?
Right. If we're going to be, in essence, you know, if they're being held up to these standards, you know, why shouldn't, you know, how should he be allowed to chew gum at a huge international meeting such as APEC? Yeah.
Well, another thing that got a lot of publicity was when Russian President Vladimir Putin appeared to assist Peng Liyuan, who is the wife of the Chinese president, Xi Jinping. I guess he gave her like either a shawl or something to cover her shoulders, which she accepted, but then put down and put on a jacket, I guess. But that certainly received a lot of comment, I think, overseas. I don't know. What was the reaction in China to that?
Oh, there was a lot of reaction to it. Initially, when it was broadcast live, the CCTV broadcaster, the anchor who was speaking at the time, noticed it and, you know, of course, talked about how chivalrous it was. You know, it was a nice gesture of Putin. But actually what happened, this got so much attention online that they started censoring it. For what reason is still unclear, but there was a lot of discussion about it. It continues to be something that people talk about. You know, there were, of course, people that thought that what he was doing was very, very kind. He's very sophisticated, one comment says. Another says, Putin is so cool, I would like to marry a guy like him. So, you know, a lot of people were talking about it. So, oh, and there was another that about, you know, asking whether or not Xi Jinping would be jealous and whether or not when Xi Jinping is in public with his wife, will he carry her bag next time? So I think probably the things that concern them the most and the reason why it got censored is Chinese officials, Chinese leaders really don't like the public talking about their private lives or about them personally.
I don't know what kind of reaction there has been in social media in China, just to the to these meetings themselves, and particularly the meetings between Mr. Obama and Mr. Xi, and then the press conference that they had in which they announced the plans for greenhouse gas emissions. And they spoke about other matters as well.
A lot of the reaction online in general to APEC has been focused on the clean skies. And people talking about APEC Blue, you know, and how because of what's gone on, what authorities have done to ensure that the skies are clear. I'm sure your listeners are aware, but the government shut down thousands of factories and initiated a ban on driving private cars that private car drivers have to drive. They can only drive every other day. They can't drive their cars every day. And they also sent about 50% of the population here was given a holiday and told to take a hike, get out of town, go somewhere else. And it was definitely, you could see it on the streets here. It was like a ghost town for a week. And now that the meetings are over, people are starting to return. And the discussion was one that, wow, it was so nice during APEC. How come we can't have this all the time?
VOA Beijing correspondent Bill Ide. Follow us on Weibo. That's China Focus. I'm Sarah Williams.
From VOA Global, from the Voice of America in Washington, here's Asia Business News. Asian stocks were subdued Thursday after Wall Street retreated following 5 days of record gains. However, Tokyo gained after a surprise rise in Japan's machinery orders. Tokyo's Nikkei 225 gained 0.8%. China's Shanghai Composite Index was off 0.4%. Hong Kong's Hang Seng was little changed, and Seoul's Kospi shed 0.1%. Sydney and Jakarta fell, while Singapore and Taiwan gained.
There was a slew of data out of China Thursday suggesting a continued slack in the world's second-largest economy, which appears to be on track to undershoot the government's annual 7.5% growth target, according to economists. Chinese industrial production and retail sales missed expectations in October, extending a trend of below-view indicators amid a backdrop of slowing growth.
Outback Steakhouse's entry into South Korea was deemed a success story by industry observers back in 2008. The chain, owned by Tampa-based Bloomin' Brands, has been in the country since the mid-1990s and expanded to 110 restaurants, making South Korea its second-largest market by store count after the U.S. Things took a turn for the worse this year, and on Tuesday, the company announced plans to close almost a third of its Korean locations.
A new death has been linked to Honda's with defective Takata airbags. According to USA Today, the Japanese automaker says it is expanding its Takata-related recalls after a driver in Malaysia died in an airbag-linked accident earlier this year. A Honda spokeswoman said the latest death in July was thought to have been caused by the faulty airbag. That brings to 5 the number of deaths possibly caused by faulty bags.
And that's the latest business news from Asia.
This is Today in History. On November 14, 1832, the first streetcar in New York City debuted with a fare of 12 cents. On this day in 1851, Herman Melville's novel Moby Dick was published. On this day in 1922, the British Broadcasting Corporation began domestic radio service from Marconi House in London. Today, the BBC is one of the largest broadcast operations in the world. In the early 1960s, a visionary named Phil Knight started a small shoe company he called Blue Ribbon Sports. But on this day in 1972, he changed its name to Nike, today one of the best-known shoe brands in the world. In 1982, the Polish people celebrated the communist government's release of Lech Wałęsa. He was leader of the outlawed Solidarity labor movement. I'm Dave DeForest with Today in History.
This is VOA Global from the Voice of America with Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman. sometimes you choose the wrong thing to steal if you're going to steal anything. It's just not a good idea.
You steal it, too.
Yeah. A Florida man stole a chainsaw by sticking it down his pants. What could possibly go wrong with something like that? Yeah.
He must have had a huge pair of pants.
I don't think so. I saw the video. Oh. Surveillance video from Treasure Coast Lawn Equipment in Port St. Lucie shows the man putting the tool worth more than $600 down his pants last month. And police say he ran away, ditched it in a wooded lot. And when employees called 911, they say Ballard returned to look for it. He got it. He was arrested again.
There's video. Find it online.
Nothing could go wrong there, eh?
The latest world news is coming your way next with Steve Norman and International Edition right here on VOA Global.
And now VOA's International Edition. Coming up, the state of dealing with the Islamic State. U.S. ties with EU to combat foreign fighters. We'll have the latest on the Ebola outbreak. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. U.S. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel said Thursday the U.S.-led air war against the Islamic State militants will intensify in the future as Iraqi ground forces improve and become more effective. Defending the U.S. strategy during a House of Representatives hearing, Mr. Hagel said as Iraqi forces build strength, the tempo and intensity of the coalition's air campaign will accelerate in tandem. He also said that there would be setbacks and that there would be a steady and sustainable progress, as is being made now.
Since I testified before this committee 2 months ago, our campaign against ISIL has made progress. ISIL's advance in parts of Iraq has stalled, and in some cases been reversed by Iraqi, Kurdish, and tribal forces supported by U.S. and coalition airstrikes. But ISIL continues to represent a serious threat to American interests, our allies in the Middle East, and wields still influence over a broad swath of territory in western and northern Iraq and eastern Syria.
A top U.S. military official, General Martin Dempsey, Mr. Hagel's assertions, he said, about the progress are being made toward defeating Islamic State, but warned that there were several unknowable factors that stood to undermine the present plan.
We don't yet know to what degree the new government of Iraq will be able to convince the Kurds and the Sunnis that it intends to have a government of national unity, one that gives the people of Iraq confidence that they have a future other than through ISIL's radical ideology. And we don't know how sectarianism will ultimately affect the region and our campaign. We'll continue to revisit and review our assumptions as the campaign evolves, and we'll adapt.
General Dempsey also expressed concern over access to resources over the long term, since both he and Secretary Hagel reiterated that defeating Islamic State would require a lengthy, multi-year mission. During Thursday's hearing, an anti-war protester briefly burst into the room shouting, "There is no military solution," before being hastily pushed out by security officials. Last week, President Obama approved sending up to 1,500 additional troops to Iraq, roughly doubling the number of U.S. forces on the ground to advise and retrain Iraqis in their battle against the Islamic State militants. Prosecutors in Turkey released a dozen nationalist protesters on Thursday who attacked three American sailors in Istanbul the day before. The incident comes ahead of the visit by U.S. Vice President Joe Biden and at the time of tense U.S.-Turkish relations. Dorian Jones has more from Istanbul.
Turkish authorities released the 12 nationalists early Thursday without charge. They've been detained by police for assaulting the three American sailors. The sailors, all from the destroyer USS Ross, currently visiting Istanbul, escaped without harm. Diplomatic columnist Semih Adiz of Turkey's Taraf newspaper says both the attack and the reaction of the authorities are worrying signs of deteriorating US-Turkish relations.
There is this general feeling in Turkey, in the public and amongst politicians, that America is only in the region to pursue its own agenda against the interests of regional countries. Given that Turkey is a predominantly Islamic country, there's also the perception that America is generally anti-Islamic.
Dorian Jones of VOA News, Istanbul.
United States and the European Union are strengthening ties in an effort to crack down on foreign fighters returning from Syria, intent on carrying out terrorist attacks in their home countries. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has our report.
After 2 days of talks in Washington, U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder announced stronger cooperation with European Union ministers aimed at identifying and stopping foreign fighters from carrying out acts of terrorism.
The Department of Justice has detailed federal prosecutors and senior law enforcement advisors to reside in key regions, including the Balkans, the Middle East, and North Africa, to work with countries seeking to increase their capacity to investigate and to prosecute foreign terrorist fighters.
A UN report estimates 15,000 fighters from around the world have left their home countries to join extremist groups operating in Syria and Iraq. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
You know, Secretary of State John Kerry says it's not the right time for Israeli and Palestinian leaders to hold new face-to-face negotiations. Mr. Kerry held talks Thursday in Amman with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Jordanian King Abdullah, as well as separate meetings with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. Tensions have grown in Jerusalem in the last several weeks over the Temple Mount, a holy site that Muslims call the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Site is revered by both Jews and Muslims and is administered by Jordan. Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf is ending the state of emergency she instituted because of the Ebola crisis. She said 10 of Liberia's 15 counties have reported no new cases since Sunday. Liberia hadn't been under a state of emergency since August. Of the three African nations where the outbreak has been centered, along with Guinea and Sierra Leone, Liberia is the worst hit by the epidemic. Meantime, the World Health Organization has said that there are now 5,160 reported deaths in the outbreak. Medical aid group MSF, also called Doctors Without Borders, says the first clinical trials of potential treatments for Ebola are expected to begin early next month in three West African Ebola treatment centers. MSF will be hosting those clinical trials. Lisa Schlein reports.
Doctors Without Borders says the three clinical trials are aimed at quickly finding an effective therapy against the deadly Ebola virus, which has claimed more than 5,000 lives. Peter Horby, the chief investigator for the drug trial being led by Oxford University, says the only way to know whether available drugs work on Ebola patients is to test them during an epidemic.
If we're going to find a treatment, we have to do it now, which is why we have to accelerate these trials, and it's very challenging. We're going fast by clinical trial standards, maybe not fast enough for the people on the ground.
The drugs were chosen on the basis of their safety and efficacy and also on their availability. First results could be available in February. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And one last story. A Ukrainian military spokesman said Thursday that a buildup of Russian military hardware is continuing in areas of eastern Ukraine controlled by pro-Moscow separatists. Andriy Lysenko said in Kiev that officials are constantly seeing Russian military equipment with what he called terrorist markings, an apparent reference to the separatists moving up and down the front lines and dividing the two sides. Moscow denies any involvement in eastern Ukraine. That's a look at some of the stories making news. There's always more here at voanews.com. And if you happen to find yourself on the conversation about the news on Twitter, I'm there at VOA Norman. Have a great Friday.
This is Business News on VOA Global. Jim Stevenson along with Ira Melman. U.S. stock indexes closed mostly higher as traders welcome more positive news on corporate earnings and deals. The surge overcame a slump in the energy sector brought on by the latest decline in the price of oil. Crude lost 4% and is trading at a four-year low as investors worry about supplies outstripping demand. Walmart stores and media conglomerate Viacom rose after reporting results that were better than analysts were expecting. The Standard & Poor's 500 edged up a point to 2039. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 40 points to 17,652. That's another record. The NASDAQ up 5 points to 4680.
Now a little bit more on that oil story. The price of oil took another sharp tumble Thursday as it appeared increasingly unlikely that OPEC members will cut production to staunch a plunge in prices that is entering its fifth month now. Benchmark U.S. crude was down 2.5% to $75.30 Thursday afternoon. It's down 30% since late June to its lowest levels since September of 2010.
Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway is powering up its business even more, buying the Duracell battery business from Procter & Gamble. It's a deal valued at approximately $3 billion. That's with a B. Procter & Gamble is the world's biggest consumer products maker and had announced last month it wanted to make Duracell a standalone company. P&G acquired Duracell back in 2005 and said at the time it preferred a spinoff of Duracell, but that it was considering a sale or some other options.
Now, DreamWorks Animation stock soared more than 15% on Thursday and reports that toy maker Hasbro is in talks to acquire that film studio. That is the latest in international business news from VOA Global.
This is VOA Global on the Voice of America. We're going to check in with Today in History and Dave DeForest.
And we will also check American Cafe, and we will take you to that concert that took place on Tuesday evening here in Washington, celebrating Veterans Day. All this on VOA Global from the Voice of America in Washington. I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. A project taken on by 11 graduate students at Texas A&M University's School of Architecture to design light, durable, and quickly deployable Ebola clinics recently drew interest from around the world. VOA's Greg Flakus is in the cafe with a story of how these students came up with a variety of creative and practical solutions to the problem.
Architecture school dean Jorge Vanegas says they had to think light and portable.
Something quick, modular, deployable, that could actually satisfy a given program.
Celso Rojas concentrated on panels of aluminum, wood, foam insulation, and plastic that can be quickly connected together on site.
The other aspect of using this panel is since it is modular, if it is beyond the point where you can disinfect it, you can just replace it with a new piece.
His friend, Iranian-born Sohail Hamida, designed an accordion-like flexible structure.
We can fold it, put it in a container, put the container in a cargo, and then transport it to the site.
Their professor, George Mann, says the Ebola crisis in Africa has created a high demand for such a clinic, which is not yet actually available.
As of now, these are simply ideas, and we hope that it can get to realization quickly.
Mann says the next step is to incorporate ideas from these designs into a prototype for testing. So for architecture students, there may be even more ambitious projects to come. Greg Flakus, VOA News, College Station, Texas.
Tuesday was Veterans Day in the United States. Many Americans enjoyed a day off from work. One television network hosted a megastar-studded concert in Washington to honor the millions of men and women who serve and have served in the U.S. military. Huge crowds came out to watch the show at the National Mall. Araj Arabasadi was there and has this report.
It was a Veterans Day celebration on the National Mall called the Concert for Valor. The first-of-its-kind show was presented on the Home Box Office, or HBO, a subscription television service. Jennifer Hudson started things off by singing the Star-Spangled Banner.
Hold still, can you see by the dawn's early light?
And comedian Jamie Foxx led the crowd in a chant.
USA! USA! USA!
But it was Bruce Springsteen, Dave Grohl, and Zac Brown who electrified the crowd by playing a cover of Creedence Clearwater Revival's 1969 anti-war anthem, Fortunate Son. Between live performances and pre-recorded greetings, the crowd met soldiers like Kelly McCoy, who told a story of her convoy coming under fire in Iraq.
and what it took to save those fighting under her command.
A group of enemy soldiers was rapidly approaching our vehicle with AK-47s, and I was forced to kill two of them with my M4 rifle. Three of our four vehicles had been damaged, and I had to go back into the ambush to try to secure my personnel and the soldiers that were with me.
Backstage, McCoy downplayed her valor to reporters.
Every single soldier has a story that's very much like mine. And I would ask every American to take, you know, a personal interest in getting to know the veterans in their communities.
Hundreds of thousands attended the free concert that honored America's veterans on the national stage. The show brought their stories to the big screen and celebrated their heroism to the millions of people watching at home and abroad. In Washington, Arash Arabasadi for VOA News.
You can hear American Cafe every day on air and online at voanews.com and also as a podcast. I'm Ira Melman in VOA's American Cafe.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Byrd, and here's what's happening now. The Copenhagen, Denmark suburb of Albertslund was once a drab and industrial area with bland single-story block homes designed for employees. Now it's on the cutting edge of reducing greenhouse gas emissions through a new program to test city lighting systems in a real-world environment. Albertson is the home of the DAL, or Danish Outdoor Lighting Lab, where dozens of companies are testing the latest designs in street lighting. Engineers have set up different lighting systems, some powered by wind or solar power, to test their energy efficiency. Kim Brostrom is the chief technical officer of DAL. He told the Reuters news agency that 50 systems are being tested in the 1.5 square kilometer area.
We have 50 different solutions installed around us here. So when you come as a decision maker, you can see the different kind of solution in real life. So we have installed this in a scale 1-to-1. You can go down under the luminaires and look up at the masts and see how it actually is working in real life.
DAL is actually a consortium of the Technical University of Denmark, the city of Albertslund, and Gate 21. One facility tests the quality and performance of the lights. Another allows manufacturers and customers to use animation to see what different systems provide. A third is the Outdoor Living Lab, which allows companies such as Philips, Osram, Siemens, and several of their smaller competitors to showcase their products. Kim Brostrom says that every possible scenario is being tested.
We have installed 9 kilometers of streets. We have 280 masts placed here. We have 50 different solutions. We have 10 different management systems. And we have a lot of different sensors and things out in the open area.
Each one of the light poles has its own IP address, so it can be monitored using the Internet. Systems can also be controlled remotely using a tablet computer. Jakob Andersen is the chief science officer of DAL at the Technical University of Denmark.
From the control room, every lamp has an IP address, so you can monitor the runtime, efficacy, lumen output, or the power consumption. And then we do real-time measurements on the lux levels, on street level.
Throughout the testing lab, lights will brighten when a pedestrian, cyclist, or car approaches. They dim when that passes. Sensors in some systems also track other conditions, such as humidity, traffic density, air quality, noise, and weather conditions. Jakob Andersen says that one of the goals for the lighting systems is to become interactive.
So that when you arrive at a specific fixture, the fixture will tell you, hi, I am this type of fixture, my runtime has been so and so, I've used this amount of energy in the time that I've been installed. Had I been a conventional luminaire or light pole, I would have used this amount of energy.
Danish company Focus Lighting AS is one of the manufacturers showing off its systems at Dahl. Managing Director Peter Olivarius told Reuters that the lab offers potential buyers the chance to see how systems would work in their city.
Light can be defined on a piece of paper, but when you go in the real world, you really see it's solved in so many different ways. So you have to visually feel the lights in the street before you can make the right choice of your lights.
Copenhagen hopes to become carbon neutral by 2025. With street lighting a major source of carbon dioxide emissions, the systems being tested at Dahl could help the city reach that goal. The technology being developed at Dahl also has applications for other city services, including managing parking spaces, water meters, and city sewers. So what do you think? Have you ever thought about how much energy the streetlights in your city use? Let us know your thoughts by visiting our Facebook page, VOA Asia. You can also email us by addressing it to voaasia@voanews.com. Until next time, I'm David Byrd.
You're listening to VOA Global on the Voice of America. Jim Stevenson with Ira Melman. You know, Ira, somebody has made a very swift move to the top of the music charts. We're going to check it out with Ray McDonald coming up.
And also, we're going to check sports. There's, you know, the golf and the tennis world are not centered in the United States as they seemingly always were when we were growing up.
Right.
It's become global.
And it's constant year-round.
Yeah, never stops. And we will check sports momentarily here on VOA Global from the Voice of America. From VOA Global in Washington, we check sports. Japan's Kei Nishikori. Won his fourth straight three-setter against David Ferrer Thursday to stay in the hunt for a spot in the semifinals at the Barclays ATP World Tour Finals in London. Nishikori recorded his 55th match win of a career-best season against Ferrer, who was a replacement for the injured Milos Raonic. Nishikori hit 41 winners and won 80% of his first service points in a 4-6, 6-4, 6-1 victory in just under 2 hours.
Miguel Angel Jimenez leads the Turkish Airlines Open after a superb opening round of 63 in golf action. The Spaniard is 9-under par and a stroke ahead of Ian Poulter. Poulter says his position on the leaderboard points to better things ahead for him.
It's about being happy to play golf right now. My body's in good shape. And when I'm feeling like that and when I'm practicing hard, and the equipment's working well, then obviously I can have a lot of fun on the golf course, and that's exactly what I did today.
After Jimenez and Poulter, Tyrell Hatton, Wade Ormsby, and Brendan DeJong are all lurking in fine position there at 7-under par.
Turkey is back in the race to host the 2022 Ryder Cup, a day after announcing the withdrawal of its bid because it would require cutting down up to 15,000 trees to accommodate grandstands at its chosen course. The European Tour said Thursday that Turkey was one of six nations to formally declare their intention to submit a bid for the event, along with Austria, Germany, Italy, Portugal, and Spain. The Tour says Denmark has pulled out of the running.
Michael Schumacher's family is still confident about the former Formula One champion's future. They're not giving any new details, though, about his condition. A message from Schumacher's family posted on his official website Thursday thanked fans and well-wishers for facing the fight together with him and us. It added, "We remain confident and hope the best for Michael. Your strength is helping us to keep supporting him." The statement gave no further details. The seven-time F1 champion suffered serious head injury while he was skiing in France at the end of December.
And Anthony Davis in the NBA had 25 points, 12 rebounds, and 6 block shots as New Orleans down the L.A. Lakers. That is a look at sports on VOA Global.
Hi, I'm Ray McDonald. I'm the Voice of America, and this is the Top 5 Countdown. We're unleashing the five most popular songs in the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart for the week ending November 15th, 2014. I'll tell you up front, we don't get any new songs this week, but things do get shaken up a bit. It all starts in fifth place, where Jessie J, Ariana Grande, and Nicki Minaj dip a notch with Bang Bang. Jessie says she wanted to assemble this lineup for a long time. Hold on for details.
Bang, bang into the room. I know you want it. Bang, bang all over you. I let you have it your way. A minute, let me take you.
J, Ariana Grande, and Nicki Minaj fall a slot to number 5 with Bang Bang. Jessie says she only met the other two after the song went to number 1 on iTunes. However, she'd wanted to work with both for some time. Jessie also says she wanted to use Nicki 5 years ago on her debut single, Do It Like a Dude. Taking over 4th place is Maroon 5 with Animals. This band has been around for 20 years, but not always under this name. Stay with me for more. Baby, I'm playing on you tonight. Hunt you down, eat you alive. Just like animals, animals, like animals, moles. Maybe you think that you can hide. I can smell yourself for miles. Just like animals, animals, like animals, moles. Maybe I'm... Maroon 5 climbs a slot to 4th place with its latest smash, Animals. This Los Angeles group formed in 1994 as Kara's Flowers and released one album under that name in 1997. 4 years later, the members regrouped as Maroon 5, and the rest is chart history. Holding in 3rd place is Tove Lo with Habits Stay High. Where did that name come from? I have the answer after the song. Spends another week in 3rd place with Habits Stay High. This Swedish artist's real name is Ebba Tove Elsa Nielsen. Lo is Swedish for lynx, a species of wildcat that Tove says she fell in love with as a little girl. After 8 weeks, Meghan Trainor falls off the Hot 100 pedestal. All About That Bass falls to 2nd place. What's next for Meghan? The answer's on the way.
Because you know I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, bass.
Meghan Trainor ends her 8-week reign atop the singles chart as All About That Bass dips to number 2. Meghan is now a fixture on the pop music map. Last week, she and Miranda Lambert sang this song at the Country Music Association Awards in Nashville. And Meghan kicks off a headlining North American tour next February in Vancouver, Canada. Taylor Swift retakes the Hot 100 title, but that's only the beginning of her phenomenal week. I'll tell you all about it after Shake It Off. It's a voice from the past. Taylor Swift retakes the pop singles crown with Shake It Off, giving her 3 total weeks at the top. Taylor's 1989 album just opened at number 1 by selling more than 1.2 million domestic copies. That's the largest sales week since the Eminem show sold 1.3 million copies way back in 2002. Well, that's a wrap for this week, but as you know, the chart is always changing. Come back in 7 days and I'll hit you with an all-new lineup. I'm Ray McDonald, and this has been the Top 5 Countdown on The Voice of America.
You know, one of the top tourist attractions in the world is Disneyland in Paris. Millions of people go there. However, if you have flown all the way to Paris and bought tickets to Disneyland, you might want to stay inside your hotel room.
Well, we all know you can find Mickey Mouse inside Disneyland as a big attraction, but the attraction outside right now, a live tiger roaming around. In France.
It's a young tiger on the loose. They're looking for it. They haven't found it as we're doing this program. They don't know where it came from, you understand. They have no clue where this tiger came from. They checked with Disney World, Disneyland, Euro Disney. They checked with an animal park nearby. All the animals are accounted for. They have no idea where this thing came from.
It's a massive hunt, Ira. 60 police, fire, other security forces, they're all out there tracking this tiger. They've got a helicopter, thermal detectors to spot the heat, trained dogs, a wolf catcher, too.
The question is, number one...
Why would you send a wolf catcher after a tiger anyway?
I don't know, because maybe I have no idea. But, I mean, my initial thought, being that this is Disneyland, is that this thing is really animatronic. And, I have no idea. But can you imagine all the business that they're losing and all these poor people, really, who have saved this money to go there and they have to stay inside
their
hotel room?
Hope they find it soon.
I hope so, too. Well, that's going to wrap things up for our program today. We would like to thank some people. Our director has been Tracy Carter. Our technical director has been Sidrak Franklin. And our overseer, as always, is Diane Gowell.